Welcome back to That Classic Rock Show. We are talking to Michael Flynn, Jerry Smith, and Quentin Lang. And this first question of the second part is to Quentin Lang. Just tell us a little bit about your history in music and some of the bands you were in.
Yeah, well, I got involved in rock and roll about 1968 with a band called The Soul Machine. We had alluded earlier to the Four Days and a Night group. John Priola started The Soul Machine. He was a former trumpet player with Four Days and a Night. And it, Soul Machine was a very, very popular band. During that, I was a trained horn player, so I had Stax influence for R&B music. And I was involved with that band for nearly 2 years. And we had the pending draft at the time during Vietnam. So I had to keep up my student deferment. And I chose to go back to school. At that particular time, Bunky Green had befriended John Priola. And he was a Playboy jazz artist who happened to be one of my idols at the time. And he took my place. And that whole Soul Machine band eventually morphed into a rock big band that recorded called Jumbo, which was the first rock big band that was that ever came out of Chicago. And I became Bunky's protege. I studied with him. Well, I studied with a lot of people. And that was really my trip to rock and roll. I took a break after that period of time, and I got into playing society parties and things of that nature, and playing a lot of shows, being a call or a top call to play like the Temptations and Four Tops and, you know, some of the national acts that were coming through town. And they had to supplement the bands. At the time, we're traveling at, with you know, four, five, six, seven horn players. They would have a nucleus group that would come with them on the road, and then they would supplement those bands with Chicago talent. And I would get the call and do that. And then that whole period for me sort of ended when I got together with Jerry and Mike and Jimmy Rogers when we put the Mods back together in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, why was Chicago so brass-oriented? You had the Buckinghams had brass, you had the Ides of March with Vehicle had brass, and then of course Chicago got very famous, and I understand you went to high school with one of the members of Chicago, but why was Chicago so into brass in their bands?
Well, Chicago was always the jingle capital of the world through probably the late 80s. There were a lot of studio musicians that were brass players. I think when a lot of the, quote, garage bands came into the studio, they were looking to enhance what they had done up until that point. I mean, again, you have to understand, we're 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old people writing music, writing pop tunes. Sometimes those tunes sounded good, sometimes they didn't. So they would supplement that with horn sections, basic studio players that were doing jingles. And they liked the sound, and it happened.
Yeah.
And if you were a horn player and you wanted to get into a rock band and meet girls,
that's what you
played that. You played that music.
So you went. Let me ask one more quick one. So you went to school with Jimmy Pankow. So were you in marching band with him or anything?
Jimmy was part of, and so was John Priola, was part of the Notre Dame Extension program, all out of Notre Dame High School in Niles. And we all, or a lot of us, came out of that program. So we were schooled in classical training. I was a classical flute player, learned how to play jazz saxophone. And tons of players came out of that program back in the day.
So, all right, let's play a portion of the Bunky Green song, Funk Ain't the Word, off the album Transformations. Quinn, I have a question to ask you.
Sure.
Did you guys write a song called Chi-Town to Miami about the Chicago Bears 2006 Super Bowl appearance?
As a matter of fact, we did. I was sitting in my living room, or my den, and I was watching. I'm a big Bears fan, and this was about 2006, and I said, you know, to myself, I said, this team looks pretty good, and I started writing some lyrics down. All of a sudden, I said, you know, this might happen. This team might go all the way this year. So I called Mike, and I were working on the mods together, and I said, I got an idea for a song. I could use some help. We got together. We wrote Chi-Town to Miami. As the season was progressing, the Bears were getting better and better and winning and winning and winning. About two or three weeks, they had gotten into the playoffs. Two or three weeks prior to the Super Bowl, we finished producing this tune called Chi-Town in Miami. We sent it out to radio stations and TV stations, and it went crazy.
You got a lot of airplay.
Unbelievable.
A lot of TV, yeah. Yeah, commercials.
Every radio station was playing it. Every TV station was doing interviews of Mike and I about this tune. We even had to assemble a band to play live on WGN-TV.
Right.
And the Bears lost the Super Bowl. And so that was the end of our Super Bowl shuffle, you know.
It kind of died with the Bears losing.
It sort of died. But, yeah, it was an incredible experience. But, you know, what's interesting about that is you think, or the average fan thinks, that all the band does all day is work on material that they perform. Well, we're all creative people, so we're writing and arranging and coming up with new ideas all the time. So
so there was no video with you guys doing any kind of Super Bowl shuffle or anything like that?
I don't know. There might be a video from WGN.
No, I made sure that'll never get
out. On a VHS tape or something, you know.
Well, let's move on to Dinosaur Exhibit. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, let's go on to them.
Okay. All right, well, since its inception, Dinosaur Exhibit has existed, to the best of my knowledge, as a concert-only band, occasionally with featured guests such as Howard Levy, the Grammy Award-winning musician. So my question is, to whoever wants to jump in, when and how did Dinosaur Exhibit begin, and what are your plans moving forward?
Well, it kind of started, again, after Aura had ceased, and we had put in some time and energy there, and I gave Jerry Smith a call, and I said, hey, you know what, why don't we use these members and this experience and form, for lack of a better word, and no ego intended here, a supergroup, and let's put it together. And then I was kind of explaining this concept to a young man, I think he was in his early 20s, and explaining my thought, and I wanted to share the genesis of American rock. And that's what this band is mostly about. And as I was explaining it, he stopped me and he said, are those dinosaurs still playing? And I stopped and thought, yeah, you know what? You really did me a favor. First of all, most of us are way better musicians and better at our craft at this point, all these years later, than we might have been in our 20s. I said, but you did me a great favor, because coming up with a band name is a very difficult thing. And I thought, I'm going to call this thing Dinosaur Exhibit. So I gave Jerry a call and told him, and he loved
floored.
It.
I loved it. Yeah, it was great.
See, I thought maybe, you know, you guys were going to be playing at the Field Museum next to Sue. And
right.
That was.
Let's not rule that out, but no.
Good promo thing to do, so. Well, okay. That's it, huh?
That's it. That's all I got.
Well,
that was the start.
Yeah. That was the start.
But, you know, and then in calling, you know, Mike said, call Jerry Goodman. I said, he's not going to, he's not going to come out here. And I called him, and we sent him some, you know, some music that we were doing, and he came out, stayed with me, We got together, and the rest is really history in a short amount of time. We've only been together with Jerry and this incarnation of Dinosaur Exhibit for a couple of years. Of course, the pandemic hit. That was rough. Our last major show was with Steely Dan at Ravinia, as you know, for two nights. You were there.
Yep.
43,000 people. I mean, that was fantastic. And then the bottom hit, and it's been very difficult coming out of this.
I think another interesting thing about when we put this band together is were the transcriptions that were involved. Between the Mods, the Flock, and Aura, we initially went through 7 albums that these bands collectively had recorded, plus a number of singles. And we started picking through these tunes to figure out now what would be not only representative of the band today, but what would we choose to please our audience. So, and then taking those tunes again that were written by 20-some-year-olds, okay, and rearranging them and transcribing them to fit what the tune should sound like today, you know, it took a little time. So that's what we were initially working on in early rehearsals.
Right. And you can't put us in any one bag because we represent not only the three groups from the past, but you've got Jerry Goodman, who has more current type material, and then rearranging a lot of these songs just to fit with what we're at, where we're at today as musicians. And that represents a lot of different styles of music. And I think that's what people find interesting when they come out and hear us.
You are listening to That Classic Rock Show on WHRU LP 101.5 FM. Let me ask another question. We're talking to three outstanding musicians, Jerry Smith, Mike Flynn, and Quentin Lang. And I know you guys have some awesome stories about some bands you might have opened for back in the day. We'll start with Jerry. Do you have one about one of the biggest rock bands of all time?
I do. Yeah, Led Zeppelin. We toured a lot in Europe. In fact, in the States, we toured with Johnny Winter, and in Europe, he backed us up. So it was very, very unique and different. But we were playing the Bath Festival in England, and it's a three-day festival, much like Woodstock is here, several hundred thousand people. And Led Zeppelin, unbeknownst to us, but they were scheduled to perform when the sun was setting. That's what they wanted to do. And of course, as you know, you can imagine, start at 9 a.m. and it ends at midnight. Somewhere along the way, things get hung up, you go over, and we got on stage, the Flock, as the sun was setting. So after two songs, all of a sudden, there's no power. Led Zeppelin's manager decided to pull the plug on us because they wanted to perform when the sun was going down. That was devastating. It's in the book. It's in the book, Hammer of the Gods. It's all explained of what happened from their perspective, not ours, but that was devastating. That was a bummer.
So is there just one plug that comes out and then all the amps go out?
Probably. You know, you're on a remote stage, so they pulled this big thing out with 8,000 volts or whatever. You just can imagine, but everything went out.
Well, I know that the last show, I know Jim and I were at your last show at Hey Nineties, and you did a version of Whipping Post, which the Mods also did. So why don't we listen to the Mods version of Whipping Post off of the album Soldier On, and I think it might have been 2007 when that came out.
Oh, dying.
Very familiar with the whipping post done by the Allman Brothers, as Mark alluded, Dinosaur Exhibit also do the song. Mike, can you just tell us how you've changed it a little bit?
Well, I'm constantly looking for new songs to do, and it's difficult. And a song like that, it's iconic. It's been played so many times, and you don't want to present it the same way. It's been done. It's a majestic tune. But I loved it and wanted to rework it. So the song originally is in a time signature of three. It's 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And I wanted to change it into a more of an upbeat song so you could dance to it and add horns and get that pop to it. So it's in a time signature of four now. And it drives more. So it's not as lazy. It's more of an R&B upbeat arrangement at this point. And Quint Lang, of course, came in. And I think it was Quint Lang and Paul Redman wrote this beautiful chart for it. So it just came together.
Yeah. Quint, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It's always interesting when you take something that's designated in a particular meter and switch meters. That completely changes the feel of the song. And then by putting horn lines is basically a separate part of the tune, which just adds and enhances what we're doing. And as you can hear or did hear, it adds a lot of pop to the tune. So,
well, it's something you don't hear too much today in music. And I hopefully you guys will get into the studio and record some of these tunes. Do you have any thoughts of doing that?
Well, we're currently working on quite a few originals, and our plans are in the new future is to lay these tracks down. So hopefully soon that'll come about.
Where do you think you might record at?
That's a good question. Do you have any suggestions for us? This looks like a good studio.
How about my garage, where we all started?
I have a really good 9.2 surround system with Marantz, pretty perfect. Big amp. So I've got my keyboards there, so...
What are your plans for the future? More gigs, I hope?
We hope. I mean, this pandemic really set us back, yeah. Like it did with a lot of people. We know, you know, Ron Onesti's just opened the Des Plaines Theater. Love to play there. We all live very nearby. You know, we were at the Arcata. You guys were there at the Arcata and saw us with Wishbone Ash a couple of years ago. That was great. So we'd love to get on the bill with some of these other artists. We can do our own thing as well. And we've got some ideas. I don't know if it's for public knowledge just yet, but we're looking to possibly rent a big popular venue, and bring the show to the forefront, let people know what's going on. I think this band is too important right now for people not to see us. We've sold out everywhere we played, yeah, from Space in Evanston to Evanston Rocks when that was around.
I think we're the last venue. Yeah.
Well, there's definitely an audience hungry for this type of music versus, you know, the kind of thing that the kind of pop that we're seeing now, you know, television. Anything else?
Well, I think we're at the end of the show here. This has been one of the best shows we've ever done. I think the stories you guys have told have been awesome. But I want to dedicate this show to somebody I grew up with who is in a rock band called Pez Band out of Oak Park. The drummer, Mick Rain. His name, when I knew him as a young kid, was Mike Ruain, but he passed away recently. And I just want to dedicate this show to another Chicago musician. Again, I just want to thank Mike Flynn, Jerry Smith, Quentin Lang of Dinosaur Exhibit for stopping by. Make sure you visit the band's Facebook page for news and events. And folks out there, if you get a chance to see these guys, have to go.
You've got to go see them. Well, please join us each week for music backstories and interviews from rock and roll's greatest era. We are on every Monday from 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. and Fridays from 11 a.m. to noon. Our book, Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, is available at the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum website, Amazon, various record and bookstores. You can also view Jim's exclusive rock photography at jimsamariaphoto.com. His work has appeared nationally and internationally, and he is one of the best. You can also find us on Facebook.
Did I write that last part? That I'm one of the
best? I wrote that for you.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, you've been listening to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP 101.5 FM, and available on demand 24/7 from anywhere in the world, including Evanston, Illinois, Evanston, Wyoming, and Evanston, Nova Scotia, which is in Canada.
And there are a lot more Evanstons, believe it or not.
Wow. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.